This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, are...
Kay Shaw and...
Zachary Frueling.
So this week, we're going to talk about the Season 1 episode, Heroes and Demons, which, as we know, is the Doctor's first away mission. Yay, Doctor! So, what did you guys think of it?
You know, I hadn't watched this episode in a long time, but it's always been one of my favorites. And I'd kind of forgotten that it was so early in Voyager. I'd forgotten it was a Season 1 episode. I had to go hunting for it when I was... getting ready to rewatch it.
Yeah, I loved it. It kind of surprised me. I thought it was just a for the lols episode, if you like. And there is some of that in there, but there's a lot of other interesting stuff as well. So
for the lols.
That really surprised me. For the lols.
I've never actually heard that spoken, usually just seen online.
Yeah. Well, I say it all the time, so.
I'm sorry, are you speaking English?
Yes.
Are you speaking Old English?
I'm speaking English. I don't know what you guys are speaking.
At least you're not speaking whale.
That is true. No whale this week. All whale has been expunged from my memory. And I would say I'll roll out some Old English, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I see. When you say that, I think of Old English, the really nasty beer. So don't do that.
See, I just think about sheepdogs, but...
Sheepdogs with beer.
Sheepdogs with beer. That's not what I remember Beowulf being about, but anyway.
That's the updated version.
Okay.
They rebooted it.
They rebooted Beowulf.
Yes.
Little sheepdog with his little backpack with little barrels of beer on the side. Yeah, I could see that.
He doesn't fight anybody, he just gets them all drunk.
Does the dog beat Grendel, though? That's the most important question.
Grendel gets a hangover.
Grendel gets a hangover.
See, I feel like I need to know what to call you guys during this episode. Do you guys have Old English version of your names? Like, you guys can call me, like, Zachfirth or something.
Zachfirth. Okay, Zachfirth.
I'll just be Unnamed Shield Maiden.
Unnamed Shield Maiden.
Unnamed Shield Maiden with boob cones.
Those were the predecessors to Seven of Nine's cones.
Well, considering how excited the Doctor seemed to be and how sort of pleased he was by all of the scenery and everything else, I'll just be like third fern from the left or something.
Yeah, he really shouldn't be sniffing Spanish moss.
No, that was quite interesting, wasn't it?
It's like, there might be bugs. Don't do that.
Yeah, but he was so excited.
He was. It was so cute.
He was so excited to see a tree for the very first time. Up until that point, trees were only theoretical.
And his first kiss.
Well, yeah. We'll get on to that.
Well, he has had a share of romantic encounters in the course of Voyager.
Oh, he has.
Starting with Freya.
You always remember your first.
But unfortunately, if you remember the episode, the Doctor loses his arm because he gets attacked by Grendel before he has a chance to go explore the different types of heat sources in the holodeck program.
That is true, he does.
But he also hadn't made that addition to his program yet.
No.
So
that is very true.
It'd be a cold bed for Freya tonight.
Yeah. There would just be a lot of snuggling going on. That's all snuggling.
Do you think she came back after a while and was like, oh no, where's he gone? That's really sad.
That is very sad.
Aww.
Well, yeah, because especially when she finds him later, she's like, I thought Grendel got you.
Yeah. Aw, that's sad.
So does holographic snuggling produce heat, produce friction? Does it, you know, is it an actual heat source? I don't know.
Well, I mean, light energy is a type of energy just like everything else. So I'm assuming, you know, energy isn't created or destroyed. It's just converted from one form into another. Light can be converted into heat. Make of that what you will.
When photons bump elbows?
Yeah.
Yeah, rub elbows.
When photons collide.
I wonder what happened to his arm.
Well, it's funny because they refer to it as getting a new arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works just like the old one.
Like it just dissipated and went away.
Did they just have to, like, re-download the arm subroutines?
Yeah, I still do remember, actually, when I saw this episode for the first time. And when they get Harry and Tuvok and Chakotay back at the end, I was half expecting the Doctor's arm to just kind of...
You're like, here you go. You
but it doesn't.
This.
Like, oh, there it is.
They kept his arm. I wonder what they did with it.
I think it had something to do with the loss of magnetic cohesion.
Mm. Yes.
And maybe you can't get that back afterwards.
Maybe not. All his little photons kind of just flowed out.
And they are now one with the universe.
So speaking of the Doctor's first away mission, what do you guys think of the Doctor's choice of names? Kes encourages him to choose a name before he goes on the away mission. He chooses Schweitzer, which they refer to him as Lord Schweitzer in the episode. What do you think of the choice of Schweitzer as a name? I like that he's trying to make an attempt to honor great doctors of old, but I kind of wish he went with something a little more Star Trek-y, like Dr. McCoy or something. That would have been really, really funny to me.
I really enjoyed Schweitzer. All hail Schweitzer.
All hail Schweitzer.
All hail Schweitzer.
I didn't want the callback to any sort of Trek doctor. I like that he went more human history, because that's what he was dealing with the story, was human history.
There's something so wonderfully anachronistic about this entire setting taking place inside of Beowulf, and then the name Schweitzer being thrown around left and right. All hail Schweitzer. It's just so tongue-in-cheek. It cracks me up.
Yeah. I really love it when Freya says it for the first time. She just kind of rolls it around her mouth. Schweitzer.
And I love that she's like a warrior's name. And I love that, I generally like that the Danes are basically Klingons inside this episode. You know,
oh, they
duty
are.
And honor and stories of battles and, you know, drinking in the hall. They're Klingons.
Yeah. And I feel so bad that Tuvok and Chakotay don't have songs of their deeds. I think we need to come up with some.
Songs of Tuvok and Chakotay's deeds. Okay.
Well, if anyone could sing a song of their deeds, it would be the Doctor.
Yes. That is true.
Yeah, I kind of wished we'd seen him singing in this episode. It seems like it would have gone with the episode really well, and we don't see him singing.
Well, I guess they hadn't really clued into the fact that Bob Picardo is good at that, that it would work for the Doctor as a character. Right? They hadn't got that far yet.
Yeah, maybe if we'd seen this episode a bit later on.
Yeah.
There would definitely be more singing in it.
I still like that they stuck with his snarky comments. I miss the snarky Doctor.
But I guess it works as an episode because it's this early on, because this is the first sort of... the Doctor actually going and getting to do something interesting and being treated as a proper member of the crew. Because I think this is the first holodeck episode as well, isn't it?
I think
so. We don't
so.
Really get a holodeck episode before this. I mean, we obviously see the holodeck, like Sandrine's, but an actual proper holodeck episode. Because I know we see Sandrine's in the cloud and probably a couple of other times.
And what do you guys think of that fact? I mean, what do you guys think about the fact that this is a holodeck episode so early in Voyager? Does that detract from Voyager's mission? You know, the storyline of Voyager is supposed to be they're lost in the Delta Quadrant. They're trying to get home. They're bumping into all these new alien races. And then they do a holodeck bottle episode, you know, only a few episodes in.
No, because it gives us a chance to learn more about the Doctor and a chance for growth on his character, because he admitted to Kes that he's afraid of failing.
And he gets to play warrior. Perhaps today is a good day to dematerialize.
From the feet up.
Yes. I get what you're saying. I think possibly from the general perception of Voyager that it gained over its run, maybe it's not such a great thing. But from my point of view, I loved it because I give me a holodeck episode and I'm there.
I guess there's nothing uniquely there's nothing uniquely Voyager about this episode. This could have been a TNG episode, it could have been a Deep Space Nine episode, could have been an original series episode if they had holodecks. But there's nothing so specifically Voyager to this, is there?
Other than the fact that the Doctor saved the day. all of those other series, yeah, it wouldn't have been able to happen.
Yeah, there wouldn't. There's no holographic character. That's right. Yeah.
The whole shtick was that it was the holographic character. Yeah. So they could have done something like it, but I don't think it would have worked quite the same. And I don't think any of the other characters in any of the series could have pulled it off in quite the same way.
Oh, no.
That scene when he's sitting at the table talking about how he cured the measles, biting into his elk
eating
leg.
Eating his elk. He's just ripping right into it.
That is a beautiful moment. That is the biggest leg of anything I've ever seen eaten.
It was very Flintstone-esque.
Yes, very much so. But could any other character in the whole of Star Trek ever have pulled it off quite as well as that? I don't think
no.
so.
No, not at
not
all.
For me, anyway.
And I love that he's just telling the story so casually. He's just chomping on his leg, and he's, oh, and then I, you know, invented the whatever, and I cured the measles.
And I saved the crew.
And they're just looking at him like they don't understand a thing he's saying.
Unforth couldn't take it anymore. I'm out of here.
Yeah. So I think he brings something unique to that episode concept, his character. It would have been very different if it had been in any of the other series. Although, having said that, I did feel like all of the other scenes that were not in the holodeck, which was largely Janeway and B'Elanna doing mm-hmm. their how do we fix this thing, that all felt very TNG to me. I thought that felt a lot like TNG. So I think if they were trying at the beginning of Voyager to kind of go, oh, we're getting more back towards the TNG thing, that I saw that there a lot. I felt they were like, oh, it's a life form, and everything that was going on with them working out what it was in the holodeck and kind of what was happening in there and how they were going to fix it, that felt like very classic TNG to me.
And this is the second time they've interfered with a life form that they thought that they could use for energy. Because they did it in the cloud. There's coffee in that nebula. Let's go rip a hole in it. Oh no, it's a life form.
Yeah, it's a good thing it wasn't the Equinox that stumbled upon these photonic life forms, right? They would have tried to convert it into energy to get home a little faster.
They probably did.
Yeah.
They created the monster?
They created Grendel.
That would be an interesting fanfic series.
Grendel hunts for Captain Ransom.
Oh, well, that would be interesting. But all the same things that Voyager meets, how when Equinox met them, it went so much worse.
Like an alternate version of Voyager, but the entire thing takes place with the Equinox.
Yeah.
So they run into the Kazon, they run into the whomever.
Yeah, and it all goes horribly. They just leave a trail of devastation in their wake. And Grendel hunts Captain Ransom across the Delta Quadrant. That sounds totally legitimate.
So what would the Equinox holographic doctor, you know, their version of the doctor, what would his name have been? It wouldn't have been Schweitzer.
Mengele.
I like it.
No, Mengele is a perfect choice because he was such a interesting man, to put it one way. But the experimentations that he did on people and...
He's the anti-Schweitzer.
Yeah, the anti-Schweitzer.
So what did you guys think about the relationship between Freya and, let's call him Lord Schweitzer, inside this episode?
Oh, I really liked it.
I really, really liked it. And then he had to watch her die, and I was like, oh, rip my heart out, why don't you?
Well, for a two-dimensional character, I mean, she's a fictional, two-dimensional, relatively flat character. She's remarkably compelling, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was played very, very well.
Very, very well, yeah. That death scene.
My favorite quote from their interaction is when she says, you have so many skills, your people must value you greatly. And he says, you would think so.
That cracks me up.
Which is perfect, Doctor. Absolutely perfect, Doctor.
I wanted the Doctor to say something as Freya was dying, just to comfort her, kind of. And in my mind, it was always going to be, by Grabthar's hammer, you shall be avenged. That would have been perfect.
That would have been amazing. Especially if he like grabbed her sword and he like jumped up and yelled it. That would be amazing.
I mean, he could have easily confused Beowulf with Galaxy Quest. It could happen.
Yeah.
That is in my headcanon 100%.
That was a deleted scene that they did not show us.
I knew it. I knew it.
Yeah. It's on YouTube.
Or at least go like full on con, like, I shall avenge you.
Unfurled! See, that would have been awesome, but I do really like that little death scene there. That is my little... Even though she dies, I think that's my favorite interaction.
Oh, yeah. I die with your name on my lips. Schweitzer. Oh, tears.
And then he kisses her hand. I was like, oh!
I mean, it's remarkably similar to the Janeway death scene in Coda.
Yeah, he cries less, though, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, the doctor doesn't cry. And Chakotay just bawls. Catherine!
Yeah.
But I love that the doctor just refuses to take the name Schweitzer after this experience of her saying his name after she dies.
That's very respectful, though. It shows how much it affected him and how much the small time he spent with Freya changed him.
Yeah, she clearly had a lasting impression on him.
I guess you never forget your first kiss, right?
I sleep over here, by the way. By the way, sleep over there.
She's like, you know where I sleep.
Let me draw you a map.
Subtlety is not Freya's strong point.
He didn't really seem to know what to do with that, did he?
No.
Bless him. Oh, we're back to a teenager. But you gotta love
that
pants.
Danish directness.
Except he didn't have the hot pants yet. No.
No, he didn't have the hot pants.
The Danes aren't known for their subtlety.
No. I mean, it must have been really cold. Although, was there snow?
No.
I feel like there ought to have been snow.
Well, it's really cold here right now and there's no snow.
Well, it's a little bit of Game of Thrones foreshadowing. It's like winter is coming. There's a monster. There's a monster that's coming. It's not here yet, but it's coming. It's very good.
But
Game
everybody
of Thrones,
doesn't
right?
die.
Game of Thrones pulled the same trick to be compelling.
Yeah, but Game of Thrones kills everybody. You get attached to a character and then kill him.
Game of Thrones shows a lot more heat.
Oh yeah. But that's HBO.
Yeah.
They have to.
I just thought you were saying watch out when Grendel gets here because he farts winter.
What? Wait, it's like the butterfly effect but the Grendel effect. When Grendel breaks wind, it snows over in Denmark.
Yes, that is exactly what happens.
The Grendel effect, got it.
The Grendel effect.
So speaking of Grendel, what do you guys think of Grendel itself? Do you guys remember back in the day, like 15 years ago, there was this parody website, The Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster? Have you guys seen
this? People dress up as the spaghetti monster at Dragon Con.
It was like a parody website. It was like a fake parody religion to comment on the science religion debate, the creationism and evolution. Basically, someone invented a fake religion, the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and argued that it should be taught alongside Christianity and alongside evolution as an alternate theory inside schools because they can produce lengthy religious volumes. They've got a handful of followers. They've got religious depictions, all the things that, you know, creationists say about why their views should be taught as a science inside science classrooms. They said, we have all this stuff too, so we should be taught as an alternate theory as well. So there's this parody website, The Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. And I thought that Grendel kind of reminded me of this flying spaghetti monster. So I kind of, in my mind, I've been thinking of Grendel as the photonic spaghetti monster.
It reminded me a lot of the giant macrovirus, but it was a different color. Just the shape of it. I was like, that looks like the macrovirus to me.
Yeah, the wiggly legs part reminded me of the creatures from Encounter at Farpoint.
Ah, yeah.
Can't remember what they were called, but...
The jellyfish.
The whole wiggly... Yeah, the jellyfish...
Yeah, the jellyfish marionettes.
Giant space jellyfish. Yeah. Reminded me a little bit of
those. They're like giant marionettes, right? Their little arms are being pulled by strings,
yep.
Right?
I've seen people dress up as them, too. It was really cool.
Wow.
Have you ever seen anyone dress up as Grendel at a convention?
No.
No.
Okay, one of you guys needs to do that.
Well, I am going to Dragon Con in September. I'll have to start working on that now.
Well, go check out the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and you can dress up as the Photonic Spaghetti Monster.
Well, no, they're always at Dragon Con, people dressed up like that.
At some conventions, there is a Grendel / Photonic Spaghetti Monster subculture.
Kind of.
Well, you were kind of suggesting that we should worship him, so...
All hail Grendel?
All hail Schweitzer.
All hail Schweitzer. Yes.
On the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, there are these funny phrases like, have you been touched by his noodly appendages? So, you know, have you been touched by Grendel's noodly appendages?
Not personally, no.
Well, no, because if you are, you're going to lose an arm.
Did anyone else kind of, as soon as they tried to beam the other sample on board and then they didn't get it, And then they tried again. And they didn't really think, oh, we had a loss of containment field. Maybe something bad's happened. No, we'll just ignore it and carry on. Did anybody else go, oh, that's gonna bite them in the backside later?
Everything's fine. It didn't go anywhere else.
Yeah. So I was way ahead of them on that. I was like, nope.
Yeah, let's run a quick scan of the ship's systems. To make
just
sure
to make sure
okay.
That hasn't gone somewhere it shouldn't. Yeah.
I love the little baby Grendel, you know, inside the containment field.
Yeah, I thought they looked really cool in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're quite good at doing that in Star Trek, actually, when they get things inside the little sample tubes. They always look quite cool.
Well, I love that they act so surprised that it's a life form. Have they not read, like, every log of every starship ever that encounters an energy field? Like,
yeah.
It's a life
did
form.
Did they not remember the cloud? Really?
I was going to say, did they not remember the cloud 4 episodes ago?
You guys just went through this.
Where they accidentally flew into a life form.
Because there was coffee in there.
Yep.
This time there was no coffee involved.
Well, speaking of the Equinox version of Heroes and Demons, now I can kind of picture Captain Ransom going after energy life forms to get a little extra coffee. There's coffee in that life form. He can get home a little faster and he can get a cappuccino.
Does he have as bad of a coffee habit as Janeway, do we think?
I don't think anybody has that bad of a coffee habit.
No.
She's addicted, and she's not ashamed.
Not at all. So what did you guys think about the fact that after Harry vanished and they couldn't determine what happened to him, they sent some more people to go and vanish?
I think it was the logical next step, which is why Tuvok went, because it was logical. But
yeah, I just thought it was kind of... I thought it was interesting that they just kind of sent them in there to go vanish.
Well, I think right off the bat, they don't know that Harry's actually been converted to energy. They don't know that he's disappeared.
Yeah, because
right?
they couldn't really scan missing. In
they,
there.
They,
so they had to go look
right,
for
right, they
him.
Can't use the tricorders aren't scanning very well inside the holodeck for some reason. So they don't know what's happened yet.
Yeah, I just kind of felt like there would have been something else they could have done first before sending other people in there. I don't know.
If you were Captain Janeway, Captain Shaw.
Yeah.
What would you have done?
Well, I'd have, like, programmed my tricorder, open the door, lob it in, shut the door quick. Try that, first of all.
So you would lob a tricorder probe
into
the holodeck.
Hope it doesn't break as it lands.
Well, you could wrap it in, like, some gaffer tape or something.
Some bubble wrap. Put some bubble wrap on it.
Yeah.
You could, like, beam it in. You wouldn't have to, like, open the doors and lob a tricorder in.
But actually, the lobbing it in is more visually appealing than just beaming it in.
It is. Also, I'm not sure they could just beam it in, could they? Because if they couldn't scan in there, they probably couldn't. Do they have to get a fix? Presumably they have to get a fix on the location to beam it in.
But they were able to beam in a tricorder for the doctor.
That's true. They were.
So they did beam in your tricorder.
Yeah.
What are you complaining about, Kay?
That they let Tuvok and Chakotay get completely consumed first before they thought of beaming in a tricorder, which was obviously possible. As proven later.
It sounds like they need some sort of like mobile tricorder, like one of the little mouse droids from Star Wars, but like a little tricorder version of that, a little tricorder on wheels.
Yeah.
Remote control tricorder.
It's like the whole exocomps thing, wasn't it? You know, send them.
Yes, tricorder exocomps.
Yeah, that's what they need.
Just put a red shirt on him. Because he's
red
expendable.
Shirt exocomp.
Little red tricorders.
Oh, those are the expendable ones. Just use one of those.
Well, apparently Chakotay and Tuvok are expendable, so it's all good.
No, not Chakotay.
I did enjoy them going in there, actually. That whole the whole section with the two of them in there I thought was quite fun.
Oh, it was hilarious when Tuvok tried to delete Freya. It's like, Tuvok, yes. You can't delete Freya.
And he's just trying to treat it like it's a holodeck, and then Chakotay's like, no, I'm going to go into role-playing mode now.
Do you guys think the other characters... The other Voyager characters get enough to do in this episode? It's really the Doctor show in this episode. We get a little bit of fun interaction between Chakotay and Tuvok at the beginning. Some banter about the fact that Vulcan literature doesn't have demons. And, you know, Chakotay zings him after that by basically saying that it must account for its popularity. So there's some great stuff. But generally, I feel like the other characters didn't have anything to really do.
Yeah, this is very Doctor-centric. I mean, everybody gets, like, a line here and there, but that's it.
Yeah, he doesn't come in till a reasonable time through, though. It's like 20 minutes in when he actually comes in. We do get quite a chunk of other stuff first.
But he steals the show.
And I feel like Janeway and B'Elanna saving the day with their solution.
Sciencing the science.
Sciencey stuff. Because Janeway's a scientist. We can't forget
Janeway's a scientist. Techno-babbling the techno-babble. This was an incredibly techno-babbly episode. Magnetic containment field, etc.
One of the first of a long run of sciencing the science episodes.
Yeah.
I love the scene where the sword goes right through the doctor, by the way. Yeah. That cracks
You'll want to put some ice on that.
He gets some serious street cred from the Danes.
Oh, yeah.
As a result of that.
Yeah. Do you not feel like, though, that when Janeway says to him beforehand, oh, you'll have control over your magnetic containment field so you can let things go through you or not, do you not feel like they did that just for that scene?
Yes.
Because it's the only time he does it, and then later on they have to make it so that it doesn't work anymore.
Well, they have to create some suspense, right? If nothing can harm the doctor, then there's no danger and there's no drama, right? So they have to up the ante a little bit by saying, oh, you know, in order to use the magic device that we're going to give you, you have to be in solid form, so you're actually in danger.
Yeah.
It's almost a necessary plot device, but that's why it's disappointing. Yeah.
It is, but I think the only reason they let him be able to go non-corporeal was so that they could have the guy put the sword through him.
But hasn't he already had control over that before? I seem to remember someone trying to slap him and their hand going through him.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, yeah. I don't remember when that was, though. Failed on the trivia.
Listeners, help us out.
I mean, I love the little banter about Vulcan literature. It cracks me up.
Yeah, about there being
Vulcan,
no demons.
Because Tuvok is trying to get in all, you know, he's being a troll. I mean, as you would put it, Suzanne, he's troll Tuvok. He's saying, well, Vulcan literature doesn't have demons. He's like, well, that's why it's so popular and so interesting, right?
Yeah.
Score one for Chakotay.
Take that, Tuvok.
Yeah, that was great. I thought Chakotay was great in this. Although Tuvok was comedy gold as well.
Oh, Tuvok always is.
First of all, I have to say, I love the fact that we got the word grandiloquent in here. That was marvellous. Big words for the win. And then he does get the best quote of the entire episode. If you would allow us to assist you, perhaps we could alleviate your terror. And just absolutely deadpan. That was amazing. It's just the guy's like, this bad stuff, Grendel, everything's gonna kill us, we're all gonna die. And Tuvok's like, yes, I know, but it's fine, we're here to help.
Like, Tuvok is so calming.
Even for a Vulcan, that was impressive.
I'm surprised you didn't say something like, how would Tuvok have put it? You are in no actual danger, you are only holograms.
Yeah, maybe, but I think he'd started to play along by then.
As much as Tuvok can.
Well, I think from a logical point of view, because he tried to just be pragmatic about it, and then when Chakotay played along, they got somewhere. So I think he realized that was the logical thing to do, was just to play along, but he doesn't want to be emotional about it, obviously. It's Tuvok.
All hail Tuvok.
Yeah, all hail Tuvok, the emotionless. I also really like the fact that, I can't remember who says it, but somebody says, and maybe the safety protocols are malfunctioning as well, and my brain just went, of course the safety protocols are malfunctioning. It's a Star Trek holodeck episode.
They always are malfunctioning.
Of course they are. Why wouldn't they be? It would be no fun otherwise.
Unless there's imminent danger, I don't want to watch.
Well, if crew members are being dematerialized and turned into energy, yeah, I'd say the safety protocols are off.
Or at least slightly malfunctioning.
Just slightly.
Just ever so slightly.
But there's some other great little moments inside this episode, like when the Danes / Klingons offer the doctor a glass of mead or blood mead.
I do like that. Because when Hrothgar just smacks it out of the guy's hand, he's like,
stop bothering Schweitzer!
Stop bothering Schweitzer, yeah. That bit is great.
Now, I do have a question about the photonic beings. Could they be a distant relative of the photonic beings that we see in Bride of Chaotica that also take over the holodeck?
Well, they haven't taken human form. Grendel is still a monster.
Well, maybe they learned.
Distant cousins.
Or maybe the photonic beings run later into the Equinox crew and they think, ooh, I wonder if these are related to the ones that we met earlier. And then they turn out to be really evil and they're like, no, they're not. They must be some other corporeal beings. They're nothing like the ones we met over here.
Do you think that the Grendel / the photonic beings doubt the existence of the Voyager crew? And indeed Voyager itself.
Well, they're not real, are they? They're made out of matter. Everybody knows that matter's not real. It's all about the photons.
Right, exactly.
So therefore, we're not real.
No.
Again, Grendel is just misunderstood, and that's the that's the upshoot of this, right? Poor Grendel.
Poor Grendel. The person I felt the most sorry for was Harry, because we see him for about 30 seconds. In fact, it's probably not even 30 seconds.
Dressed in fur, I might add.
Yeah.
And I wonder why he wasn't conscious. Like, if these energy beings are, you know, these photonic energy beings are basically conscious life forms, how come Harry is not still conscious when he gets converted to energy?
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually.
I wondered about that, yeah. Because he doesn't seem like he remembered it. He's like, can everyone tell me where I was?
Yeah.
Well, I think it the way I took it was they were like in a pattern buffer, like they were being beamed somewhere, but they were stuck in a pattern buffer. Whereas these photonic beings are always in that form.
Well, now I'm kind of thinking about, I know this isn't Voyager, but I'm thinking back to TNG's episode Relics, where Scotty's stuck in the Transformer.
It's the same thing. There you go.
But I guess my point is just that if Harry Kim is being beamed, people are conscious when they transport, right? If it's similar to
being beamed. Or are they just conscious of the point where they were, and then, you know, because beaming is almost instantaneously where they end up.
No, like I'm thinking of like when Barclay gets transported and he sees those little life forms inside the transporter effect,
yeah.
And he's conscious and he's afraid and, you know, these beings are coming at him. He's totally conscious for the whole thing.
I think Barclay is a little...
Brian Barclay's a little crazy, yeah. So you can't trust anything he says.
How much of that was in Barclay's head?
Well, was it in his head? Because was his head corporeal at the time? That is the most important question.
So you're saying this entire Beowulf / Grendel / holodeck thing is just in Harry Kim's head?
He had a dream.
Quite possibly.
No, this could be one of the Doctor's fantasies. The Doctor likes to fantasize about himself being the hero. We know that. We learn that later in Voyager, right? In Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy. So maybe this is one of the Doctor's proto-hero fantasies.
It's his very, very first daydream.
That would explain a lot.
I find it interesting that this is Harry playing in the holodeck by himself, because I think that's the only time we ever see that.
So Harry has the loneliest Pip, and he's the loneliest ensign, and he has the loneliest holodeck program.
Well, the only way that Harry can play the hero is when he's on the holodeck by himself.
Yeah.
So if Tom had come along, if this had been a bromance episode with Tom and Harry, what would Tom have been doing?
Tom would have been Beowulf.
Yeah. And Harry would have been Freya.
Harry would have been just expendable. He'd have been dead already.
Yeah. I don't think Beowulf had a sidekick, so...
Mm-mm. Harry could have been Tom's shield maiden.
Yes, exactly.
Unnamed shield maiden.
I just wonder whether the reason that we never see Harry on his own on the holodeck after this is because Tom won't let him after this incident.
Wait. So you're saying Harry would have been Harry wouldn't be the shield maiden; he'd be the shield yeoman.
Yes.
Harry the shield yeoman.
He would bring Tom tea whilst he's saving the galaxy or whatever he's doing. He'd be just trotting behind him with a tray of tea.
No, he would bring him a glass of mead.
He doesn't want any mead.
Stop bothering Beowulf / Captain Proton.
So, Kay, there's a question I have. So basically, I'm not a Beowulf scholar. I've read it, but a long time ago, and I haven't read it recently. But, Kay, as our resident English person, what do you think about this depiction of Beowulf as an old English epic?
Well, I'm not a Beowulf scholar either.
But you're English.
So therefore, that automatically makes you the Beowulf scholar.
Okay. Well, that's
I'm sorry,
good.
I totally threw you under the bus.
No, that's fine. I mean, I do have a photographic memory of the entirety of Shakespeare as well, so they just beat it into us at birth.
Because basically this episode gets a couple things wrong. Like, there's no character named Freya in Beowulf,
no.
As far as I know, right? So this is the Voyager interpretation of Beowulf.
It is, and it ends well as well, which Beowulf doesn't. Beowulf ends with everybody dying.
So it should be Beowulf with an asterisk after it.
Yeah. So obviously in the real Beowulf, if they'd had the Doctor there to release the talisman of Beowulf.
Is there a talisman in Beowulf? Is there?
I don't remember a talisman.
Of Voyagerism.
I don't remember one either.
So the bit that was I found was really similar is the part in the hall. Although it's obviously a lot more tongue in cheek than the actual, you know, old English epic poem.
Does Beowulf get offered a glass of mead?
I don't remember. Probably. When he first shows up, they're very sort of like, "Yay, you're going to save us from the evil thing!" Woo, and you know. Feasting and mead and ginormous elk legs and everything else is all part of that. So the scene certainly set in the right way, although I feel like it should be snowing. I don't know whether it actually mentions in the poem that it was snowing, but I feel like it ought to be snowing.
Or Grendel farts. As you eloquently referred to them earlier.
Yes, the frosty farts of Grendel.
So you're saying that everyone should have been killed at the end of this holodeck program?
Well, if they were doing a faithful reenactment of Beowulf, yeah. So I don't know what the program that Harry had originally, what happened in it. I'm guessing Beowulf saves them from Grendel. I mean, that's what happens in the film adaptation as well, as far as I remember, but...
Well, yeah, because Harry would want to be the hero.
Yeah, it would be an awfully like self-defeating program if the hero dies at the end.
Exactly. So that's why it surprises me that he'd pick Beowulf. You'd think he would pick one of however many other different things that he could have picked, but anyway. Interesting choice.
Yeah, he could have been King Arthur.
He could have pulled a sword out of the stone.
Or Maid Marian.
He could have been Maid Marian. We need to talk about Janeway's hair. That is what needs to happen now.
Yes.
Yeah, her kind of like side comb over.
Yep.
It's like a French twist almost. But this is my second favorite hairdo of hers. I mean, my first
like
is the ponytail. Always the ponytail. But I really like this hairdo.
Really? I don't like this one. This is like Janeway meets Donald Trump. It's like a...
No! No!
What did you just do?
Dude, this is so much better than the Bun of Steel, which looks like a donut on our head.
Oh, yeah. No, it's better than the Bun of Steel, but it's not as good as like season 4 and 5 Janeway.
Oh, here. The bob.
The bob. Yeah, I'm all about the bob.
Well, the bob is sassy and spunky.
My favorite Janeway hairstyle is the one she has in Workforce. Long hair.
That's good.
I like that.
Oh, I do like seeing Janeway with the long hair, with her hair let down. Yeah. And with a pink nightie.
And I like, is it Resistance? The one where she plays a prostitute.
Yes.
I mean, she doesn't actually play a prostitute, but to all intents and purposes, she plays a prostitute.
She's a prostitute, yeah.
I like when Janeway lets her hair down. I like her in the pink nightie and I have a needle with her hair down.
Yeah. But I do like this hairstyle in this episode.
Yeah, I hate to be the minority voice, but I really actually didn't like this.
I like it.
I feel like it's business-like from the front, sassy from the side. That's what I think, anyway.
It looks like one of those 1990s, like, bowl cuts or something, where she's like,
the asymmetrical
on one side
cuts.
And it's combed her. Like the, yeah, it's like a Janeway punk, you know, counterculture.
Edward Scissorhands job.
Yes.
Well, I like
or
it.
Or actually, it kind of looks like, you guys ever watch Daria?
Hello, Daria.
The friend Jane from Daria. It reminds me of Jane's hairdo from Daria.
Okay. Like yeah. I see what you're saying.
Her hair's like off to one side.
But I do like it.
I am Daria.
But she does lose it a bit in the middle. It changes a little bit. So it starts off and then in the middle it kind of goes a bit more ploofy and then it goes back again at the end. So they obviously messed something up between takes.
She got zapped
by some
of the energy.
You only get one shot at that epic of a hairdo, right?
Yeah. Also, whilst we're talking about hair, Chakotay's still rocking the salt and pepper hair at this point.
Oh, yeah. That is the best. It looks so good.
Yeah, it does. I don't know why he ever dyed it.
Ugh. I hated when they dyed it. It's like, no.
It looks amazing. Yeah, he looks great. So the other person we should probably really talk about in relation to this episode is Kes. I really like how she sort of counsels the Doctor a little bit at the beginning of this episode.
I love how perceptive she is. I think a lot of people might have missed the fact that the Doctor is nervous because the Doctor is trying to hide it. She's really perceptive. She knows the Doctor and she knows that he's nervous.
I don't think he hid his nervousness very well. He was very twitchy.
He was, but I'm not sure anyone else apart from her would have picked it up.
I picked it up.
Or cared, maybe. Maybe in season one, no one else would have cared because they don't quite recognize him as a full-fledged member of the crew yet.
The audience picked it up, yes, but I mean the rest of the crew is what I meant.
Oh, okay.
Because he is babbling away about, like, her studies.
She pretty much always is the Doctor's counselor.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes how she got to be so wise. Do you ever wonder
Definitely
that?
Definitely not from Neelix.
No, because she's so young and you wonder how she got this wisdom that she seems to have. She's just, I guess she's just an incredibly perceptive person. And I always find myself thinking this about her whenever we get her interacting with pretty much anyone. So I wonder sometimes about this negative view of Kes we get from a lot of people about, oh, how she was really boring and she didn't do anything. And I'm like, but she's really vital in like loads of episodes.
I just didn't like her hair.
I didn't mind her hair.
Once she got away from the pixie hair, it looked good. But that pixie hair, I could not stand. I was like, you are not Tinkerbell. Stop it.
I'm in the hair minority. I actually like the pixie hair. Okay.
Yeah, I was fine with it.
So, okay, Suzanne, you and I have totally opposite hair intuition.
I guess that's a good thing.
You liked Chakotay's dyed hair, didn't you?
No, I actually do like the salt and pepper.
Good. Okay, good. You have redeemed yourself, sir.
That's because that is not disputable. That is just fact.
That is true.
But I do like the way they turned Kes into a proto-counselor. At least that's the direction the writers were going with her in season one.
Yeah. I wish they developed that more. And you could see with the sort of psychic stuff that she starts to develop a bit later on once she's starting to get into season two and three, that she could have really made that into something.
Well, her empathy with the Doctor really can't be a result of her extrasensory telepathic/empathic perception, right? Because the Doctor doesn't emote telepathically, right? So she's just really perceptive.
Yeah. So that coupled with her extrasensory perception that she starts to develop later on. Yeah, she could have been really incredible at that.
Well, there's more than one source of heat. There's more than one source of heat.
There's more than one source of
fire inside the holiday program. There is photonic elbow rubbing, and then there is Kes's telepathic abilities.
Yes. Although you have to be careful it doesn't generate too much heat. So the only other little thing that I found quite interesting and quite cool in this episode was when they sort of radio down to tell Janeway that it's this Beowulf scenario. We get this reaction from Janeway that suggests, oh yes, I am familiar with Beowulf and this is clearly not going to end well. I really liked that.
I've read it. It's not going to end well.
Because we all know she's read Beowulf because she's read, you know, she reads all that type of thing. Yeah, she reads all that type of thing. I don't know when she gets time to do it, but...
I really like that they tried to take some epic literature and write it inside of Star Trek. I mean, yeah. This didn't have to be Beowulf. It could have been something else. Like, you know, given Janeway's connection to Dante's Inferno, mm-hmm. yeah. I could imagine like an alternate Dante's Inferno version of this.
That would have worked much better than the Jane Eyre thing they did. I would have preferred Dante's Inferno over...
That would have made much more sense.
I still like the Jane Eyre thing, but there you go.
Janeway Eyre.
Yeah. No, I do like the fact that they brought this in. I thought it was an interesting choice, given the fact that obviously in other parts of Star Trek we see Shakespeare a lot more commonly. That would have been a more obvious choice.
And given the fact that it was Harry that was doing it, I never would have gone there with him.
If they had gone with Dante's Inferno for this instead of Beowulf, who would have played Virgil?
Oof. Chakotay.
Yeah.
Or would Virgil be a holographic Virgil?
Maybe.
It would have been the Doctor palling around with holographic Virgil.
Virgil and Schweitzer. Rocking through all those levels of hell.
Well, that's another source of heat. So.
Yes, that is another source of heat, correct.
You wouldn't have as many tender moments with Schweitzer and Virgil as you do with Schweitzer and Freya.
No, not so much.
They would be greatly lacking.
So I just really like the episode. I think it's a fun adventure story. I like it.
I love it because it reminds me of Xena Warrior Princess.
I love it because the Doctor is just awesome, snarky, hilarious. Everything I love about the Doctor.
And I like a good adventure story. I like seeing Beowulf inside Star Trek. You know, the juxtaposition of that is amusing to me.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, you never get a bad holodeck malfunction episode. So holodeck malfunction episodes for the win.
Well, wait, I know you guys. Anything with leather and fur and boob cones, you guys are okay with.
Yes.
So you guys, I know you guys would like this.
Leather,
episode.
Fur, and boob cones. That pretty much summarizes up my tick list.
Well, there's a difference between a holodeck malfunction and a wardrobe malfunction. So.
And thankfully, there were none of those in this episode. Well, it's been fun talking about the different types of heat. But this isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Earl Grey.
And then as kind of a teenager, I kind of drifted a bit from Star Trek. And, you know, I pretended one time when I went to see Star Trek Nemesis that I was actually off to see Elf instead because that sounded cooler than seeing Star Trek Nemesis. And maybe it still is.
To the journey!
Maybe even playing it with Tuvok, who I think will be brilliant at it, and then it just constantly going brr, brr, like yeah. Him just getting really annoyed.
Yeah. Tuvok would be the Operation Champ.
Yeah, he would. Yeah.
See, and then the evil holographic doctor from Equinox is singing, you know, the particular nodes connected to the...
Yes.
Warp 5.
We should get Larry Nemechek on, and we should do a supplemental episode where we just talk and we act like we're Tellarites and we just insult each other for the whole episode.
He would probably love it.
What do you think? I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be... I might have to get coached by our listeners.
Meta Trex.
And that's the world of language that we live in. It's not this purely referential sense of language. Like when Riker says a minuet, he doesn't just mean, oh, yeah, that thing minuet that I can point to, whatever that is on the holodeck, right?
A 17th century French dance. Maybe he wants to dance.
Riker wants to bust a move.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
Another way you can help us keep all our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network through Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats in our content development team, and many more. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We have some people that we'd like to thank. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, founder and publisher of Trek FM. We'd like to thank our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Our art director, Aaron Harvey. Richard Marquez, our production manager. And Brandon Shea Metalla, who's our Patreon manager. Brandon's been doing loads of great work recently on the Patreon Zone. Those of you who are already patrons will know this. And anybody that isn't, you should have a look around on the Babel conference, see some of the stuff he's been getting on there. But we're getting lots of new exclusive content and early releases and stuff. So that's all really interesting if you want to check that out. And we'd like to give a special shout out to our three associate producers here on TTJ, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim and Norman Lau. Thanks very much for your support of TTJ and also of the Trek FM network.
Don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and get your seat on the mission. And check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Well, if you'd like to contact us to talk about Voyager or anything else related to Star Trek, you can contact us in several different ways. You can contact us via a form on Trek FM's website. Just go to trek.fm/contact. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can look in the sidebar on our To the Journey show page on the Trek FM website, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. On Twitter, you can find us under the handle @trekfm. On Facebook, we're just at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're on Facebook, find us in the Babel Conference. The Babel Conference is Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar. And we'd also like to invite you to leave a rating and a review of To the Journey on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. Well, before we wrap up the show, Kay, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
So you can find me in the Babel Conference. I'm quite often hanging out in there. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is @ChocoWeeble. So Suzanne, when you're not avenging the death of your photonic lover, where can people find you?
I will occasionally show up on the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter @KJaneWay8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8. Zachary, if anyone wants to talk some Beowulf or offer you some mead, where can they find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on the Trek FM network, hosting MetaTrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy with my co-host there, Mike Morrison. And if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, my handle is just my name, @ZacharyFruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
So join us next week when Suzanne and I will be rescuing Zachary from a holodeck malfunction. But until then, this has been To the Journey.